A man flattened by an opponent can get up again. A man flattened by conformity stays down for good. This is the thought for today at the University of Healing in Campo, California, with Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean. Stuff like that. A man flattened by an opponent can get up again. A man flattened by conformity stays down for good. These are the words of T.J. Watson, Jr., of IBM fame. He was a man who had his share of being flattened. He was flattened on many issues in his life, so he knows what that means. But what he was never flattened by was conformity. He never conformed to somebody else's life aim, and it interests me that one of his things, if indeed T.J. Watson is the same fellow who started IBM, it's one of those things that he demanded conformity of his employees, that they all wear shirts and ties and suit coats and suits, you know, to work. Very interesting, isn't it? I mean, now that's a conformity. That's a conformity. But it was out of the range of what he was meaning here, I think. Okay. If you're flattened, okay, see, if they were flattened by the conformity of having to wear ties and shirts and suits to work, if they're flattened by that, he doesn't want them. He wants them to wear clown suits if he chooses to have them and be a fabulous salesman. Now, could they be a fabulous salesman with a clown suit?
Yes.
If they believed in themselves. If they believe that what the product that they had was fantastic, here they're selling business machines, you know, to large major industries and so forth, and they come in with a clown suit on. What's the chief executive of the business? He said, well, what's that clown doing out there? Well, he's here to talk to you about IBM, boss. A clown? Well, come on in. Let's see what he's got to say, you know. And he's already amused. He's already receptive to you. And he said, you know, you are most unusual. You are most nonconformist by coming in here in a clown suit and trying to make a business sale to a business like ours. What's the symbology of this, you know? Instead of saying, pushing him down, he says, what's the symbology of this? And so you just say, you know, sir, one of the most wonderful things in the world is success. And very few people know what success is. Well, success is being yourself and having fun. Success is to accomplish whatever goal you set out for yourself. Well, my goal that I set out for myself was to come into your company and have a few moments of your time to tell you about the IBM business machines and how excellent they are and what they can do to remake the entire fabric of your company into many times more wonderful than you've already made it. You have stabilized this as an industry example. Now you can reach out by moving away from conformity into the success concept. And the guy says, well, I thought you were trying to sell me machinery. Yes, I am trying to. I am selling you machinery. But I am selling machinery first by telling you that your firm is ready for what we have to offer. We have only the finest machinery. Our machinery perhaps costs a little more than the other companies, and you could even name them, but our machinery costs a little more than they, but our machines will last longer. When you put our machines in, you have the IBM label behind you, who will stand behind these machines and who will make sure they're always operating perfectly. All you have to do is let us know when any little thing vibrates out of shape, we're there to put it in because we want to keep it long-lasting. Then we know that as you grow and need more machines, you buy more machines from us. It's not that your machines are going to wear out. It's not that your machines are not going to do it, but you're going to need more because your company is growing. Oh, my goodness sakes. You think the guy's going to buy? Mm-hmm. My goodness, he's going to buy. But you get his attention. Now, did the clown have self-confidence? Oh, my goodness, yes. Did the clown, was he disturbed by the conformity of having to wear a business suit and a tie and a white shirt when he went in to see the customer? Or that he wore a clown suit when he went in to see the customer? No. He realized that that was merely part of the role he was playing as a leader in whatever the industry may be that he was promoting. The industry may be education. The industry may be IBM. The industry may be 3M. It may be the University of Healing. Now, why is it that we at the University of Healing, instead of having just hundreds of students, that we don't have thousands of students? And we have never really paid attention to getting students, honestly. We have never really reached out. We've never really promoted it. I put a few little ads in a few magazines occasionally, and I got a couple dozen students each time. But think of why we are not student-oriented. We're not student-oriented because every person who comes to us is so precious, is so much in our dedication, so much in our love, so much in our wanting, not wanting, but so much in our working with them to accomplish the ideal goals that they have in their heart for themselves. And to let go of the past, which has been limiting them, and recognize that the present is already here with its unlimited gift for them. And of course, in the process, you don't think of getting lots of students. Now, in the beginning, I had quite a few students, regularly doing the courses. I had, maybe 8 or 10 students a week that I would proctor their lessons and write them little notes. And as I would ordain them later with giving them their degrees and certificates and so on, they would say to me, "Herb, I loved your little love letters. I loved your caring little notes." They were personal. They were notes that came right from your heart for me, and they were just for me, and they were. Because each person that sent me a lesson to proctor, I would stop and become aware of the chapter they were doing. Then I would tune in to who that person was. And, you know, you don't know the person because you never meet these people who are by correspondence. But I would tune in to them by their paper, by their presentation to me. And then I'd feel who they are. And then I'd write the little love note about how well they did the essay or if the essay needed improvement anywhere. And then I would add a little paragraph about them, telling them how proud I was of their reaching out to their inner self, you know, to be the divine self that they are. And if you go back through the lessons, you'll find in the early students how many of them are responding to that so beautifully. And they would get their lessons in. Oh, some cheated, some didn't do what they promised to do, and others did more than they promised. But it didn't matter. I was dealing with people, not with students. Yes, they were students. Yes, they were taking the course. Yes, that's why they got my attention. But they were people. Just like every child is a person, not a child that you brush aside. Every animal is an entity that deserves individual attention. And every flower, oh boy, oh boy, every flower is an entity that deserves individual attention. Now, when you can be flattened by the idea that you don't talk to flowers, you know, when you can be flattened by the idea that they're not paying their bills, so therefore I'm not going to give them any attention, when you can be flattened by the idea that people have to buy your love, then pretty soon you're going to run out of love, because bought love seems to have a limit to it. Whereas love that is given without any price, even if the person is nasty or mean to you, or to themselves, usually it's to themselves, you just give them your love. You give them your love so much. We've been to many countries, and every country we go to, in Germany and Switzerland, Italy and Africa and Canada, wherever we go, we greet people with absolute love. We hug and kiss every person, shake their hands and love them. And they say, "How can you do that? You know, some of these people are unpleasant. Some of these people are you know, physically not very beautiful people. Some of these people are not hygienically very nice people." Well, how do we do it? We love the person, not the illusion that they present to us. We love the person and not the illusion. And so we are not flattened by the conformity of loving the illusion, but we're released and opened and brilliantly enjoying loving the being itself, the divine, wonderful being. Ellen was talking to a lady on the phone, telling her about how to accomplish the goal that she had. And the lady said that she has to be in court on this day, and she wants to have a successful trial. And Ellen says, she said, what should she say? And Ellen says, well, you, to herself, now, if I'm not going to tell her that she has a perfect trial, that she's successful, I'm not going to tell her that she's the winner and the other guy's a loser. I'm not going to tell her all these things, which is what she was waiting to hear, you know. And Ellen merely said one phrase to her, all is in divine order. Now, if all is in divine order, then how can anything not be in divine order? Mm-hmm. What is right for her? Is divine order right for her? Is divine order right for her? Sure. And so what did she say? Thank you very much. See, I hadn't thought of that. Because Ellen's been dealing with a number of people recently who have personal problems and business problems and whatever, financial problems and health problems. And she says, all is in divine order. She says it to all of them. All is in divine order. And so what are these people doing? They're saying, all is in divine order. Now, if they think divine order is not so cool, well, then that's the way it is. If they think divine order, which I would think is pretty wonderful, is pretty cool, then they know that Ellen speaks the truth and shares it unconditionally with anyone who has a question, with anyone who wants an answer. And you know, that's quite wonderful, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's really quite wonderful. A man flattened by an opponent can get up again. A man flattened by conformity stays down for good. So when conformity comes our way, with people who say, I am sick, I am poor, I have problems, that's a conformity. That's just an illusion that they have. And in an instant, that illusion can completely change. In illusion, the phone can ring and the doctor says, here's the health report, everything is perfect, all is in divine order. And so the doctor says, you know, you're for a man your age, you're in spectacular form, you know. For a woman who has been through what you've been through, you are the living image of perfect health. You're fantastic. You don't look like a 30-year-old woman at all. You look like an 18-year-old. Fantastic, you know. Now, conformative will make us look at our illusion of ourself. And when we look at our illusion of ourself, we'll say, I am 60 years old, I am 80 years old, I am whatever. And then that's what we are. Oh, I am proud to be 80 years old, I am so glad I've got here. Nonsense. You are proud to be 25 years old. If you keep saying you're 80 years old, you're going to be what the image of the world is of an 80-year-old. You want to be the image of yours, of a 25-year-old. So now, what does a 25-year-old do? They get up in the morning, they feel fantastic. If they've had a night out the night before, they feel a little woozy, but that's the body, you know. And you do too, if you don't have to either. So then you go to work. 80 years old, you're going to work. Sure, you're having a ball. You're working for the University of Healing, or you're working for some non-Illimasinary organization, and it's wonderful. And you come in the morning, good morning, everybody, how is everybody today? And they say, you know, where are you getting all this spunk from? Where are you getting all this energy from? Oh, my divine self. I live in my divine self. All is in divine order for me. I love being 25. But lady, you don't look 25, you look 80. Well, that's in your eyes. In my eyes, I'm 25. Give me anything that you'd ask a 25-year-old to do, and I will figure a way to have somebody else do it. You think I'm a fool? You think I'm a fool? I know how 25-year-old work, and if I'm the guy that ends up doing it, I will do it perfectly and beautifully and wonderfully. But just remember, if I'm 25 years old, I got that same verve of a 25-year-old, the same charm, the same magnificence, the same creativity, the same weaseling it out of doing the work. I'm not stupid, you see? And so we think of that, you know. But hey, remember. Now, I give these talks for little children, Mr. Candle talks. And in one of the talks, I talked about the little boy who was playing with his friend, and another friend came over, and there was only two fire engines that play with, or trucks or whatever. And so the other little boy says, I want to, blah, 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 blah. And so the boy who owned the two, he says, oh, here, you can have this one. Oh, thank you very much. And so they played with it and played with it. And he says, can I keep it? And the boy who owned it, he says, sure. And so the boy left and took it and went home. And the boy's mother came out and said, you gave away your toy. That was very nice of you. That's okay, Mom. He gets tired of things too. And later he'll want to exchange it for something else, you know. That's okay. How do you know this? Well, I've seen him do that, because I do that too. And here, this little boy is a peacemaker. This little boy is a sharer. He knows how to get what he wants. And he knows that nothing is possessed or nothing is owned. And he shares openly. And when he shares openly, everything comes back. Oh, I remember when I was a kid and I had my little notebook filled with all the junk that I owned. And I'd share it with other people. And, oh, I got some real good stuff for nothing, for the dumpy stuff I had. But they wanted what I had. And they were willing to give me their fire engine for my set of marbles or something, you know. And the fire engine, much more valuable than the marbles, you know. But this is just not to stay by conformity, not to think that just because you might value something lesser, someone else might not value it higher. You are the master of your life, and you value everything high. You value everything beautiful. You value everything good. And you are not limited by conformity. You are uplifted by it. You walk into the big industrial firms with your clown suit on, and they say, what is going on here? But they let you in. You walk into the hospital with your clown suit on, and they say, hey, that's nice. You walk into the hospital with your normal suit on, and then you act like a clown. And they say, hey, that guy's all right. I was in Robinson May yesterday buying a jacket, and the one clerk comes up to the clerk who was working with me, and she says, see that man over there? And the clerk says, yes. The clerk who saw the man was a younger one, and the other one was the older one. And so she said, he goes around barking. He goes around barking? Well, you know, there's all kinds, my clerk said. And then the young clerk said, well, you know, he's barking at a little girl. And he was doing this and he was doing that. And so both my clerk and myself, we thought, hey, it's okay. It's okay. Surround him with our pure white light of love, and all is in divine order. And so what happened? The little girl went away with her mother, and he stopped barking. Because he was doing it to amuse the child, apparently. Or perhaps we had put within him wisdom, stability, love, non-judgmental, all these beautiful things. You see, instantly, our world is whatever we are in our mind, instantly. So don't let the conformity get you down. Let it be for good, always. I love you, I love you, I love you.